Going to go ahead and get started. Yeah. I'll call to order the meeting of the Legislative Budget Office Oversight Commission today being Tuesday, October 8th. I'm glad to have you all with us today. Appreciate your attendance very much. Just to let you know, we'll add at the end on the agenda under other items as determined by the chair, we have Mr. Heller, who will be addressing the commission for a couple of minutes. Mr. Heller? Mr. Heller, did you hear that? Okay. All right. Then we'll go on to want to make sure that we welcome everybody, but also, Ms. Weber, would you just, again, for the sake of the Oversight Commission, I think you have a couple of new people, and we've given them an opportunity to come up and be able to introduce themselves.
Madam Chair, my name is Michelle Weber. For the record, thank you very much. I'll invite Adam Blom to the table first, who joined us on October 2nd. And Adam's primary responsibility will be judiciary and public safety.
Welcome. For the record, again, restate your name and office just for the audio recording.
Madam Chair, my name is Adam Blom. I'm an analyst with the Legislative Budget Office.
And what area will you be overseeing?
I'll be working on judiciary and public safety.
Okay. And what's your background? Where do you come from?
So I have a master's degree in public administration from the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I worked for the city of Kansas City for a number of years in a budget analyst capacity. And most recently, I worked for Dakota County as a management fellow.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. The Chiefs didn't do too well yesterday, though.
That's all right.
Yes, I know. My sister lives in Missouri and another one in Kansas, so I always keep an eye on what's happening with the Chiefs. So, well, we're glad you're here in Minnesota. Of course, now you are a Vikings fan.
Madam Chair, of course.
Of course. Well said. Smart man.
Madam Chair, I'll now invite up Jim Carlson.
Mr. Carlson, welcome. And again, for the audio record.
Madam Chair, my name is Jim Carlson. I'm an analyst with the Legislative Budget Office. My coverage areas are environment, agriculture, and housing.
And tell us a little bit about yourself, where you came from.
Yep. So I spent 11 years working at the Minnesota Department of Revenue, where I spent time as an auditor in withholding tax and individual income tax. And over the last year, I was part of the policy group for the Income Tax Withholding Division, where I also served as the fiscal note lead.
Wonderful. Welcome.
Thank
Glad
you.
To have you here.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. And you're a Viking, so we're good. All right.
Madam Chair, I will now invite up Laura Seco. Mm-hmm.
Hello, Madam Chair. My name is Laura Seco, analyst with the Legislative Budget Office, and I'll be overseeing transportation fiscal notes.
Welcome. Glad to have you. A little bit about yourself, where you're from.
Yep, I grew up here in the Twin Cities area in Coon Rapids. I attended the University of North Dakota, majored in political science with a public administration minor. And I've spent the last 12 years or so in the financial services industry conducting fraud and money laundering investigations.
Wonderful. Great. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, the last new member of the Legislative Budget Office is Carlos Wierica.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Carlos Wierica. I'm an analyst with the LBO, and my policy areas are Human Health and Human Services, and the health boards.
Wonderful. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Yep. Madam Chair, prior to coming to the LBO, I was a project coordinator with a local nonprofit in Minneapolis. And prior to that, I was finishing my master's degrees in public policy and public health at the University of Minnesota.
Hey, very good. Welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Weber, you have an LBO update. Before we do that, members, you have the August 23rd meeting minutes in your packet. As presented, I'll take a motion to approve the August 23rd meeting minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Representative Carlson moves. We do not have a quorum yet. We cannot take action. Thank you, Ms. Ho. Appreciate it. Okay, we'll set that aside for now. The next thing is our LBO update. Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to provide an update to you on the work of the Legislative Budget Office since we last met on August 23rd. I'm planning to speak a bit to the transition of fiscal note oversight to the Legislative Budget Office on September 1st, changes that we've been working with MMB on to the fiscal note tracking system, as well as the costs associated with those changes, provide an update on the staffing and space for the office, and then also share with you where we're focusing our efforts between now and the beginning of the next legislative session. The LBO took effect on September 1st. However, that fell on the Sunday of Labor Day weekend. So we think of September 3rd as our first official day with respect to oversight of the fiscal notes. We published the uniform standards and procedures. We also published a notification of the standards and procedures in the State Register in the September 16th publication of that document. We've also released on September 3rd updates to the fiscal note tracking system that updated both the workflow so that requests for fiscal notes came to the LBO and then review and approval of fiscal notes after agency completion was signed off by LBO analysts. Since that time, on September 3rd, there were six fiscal notes remaining from the 2019 legislative session. Because of the consolidated nature of those notes, it impacted 22 different agencies that were not yet complete as of September 3rd. So those incomplete notes transferred over to the Legislative Budget Office. Analysts in the Legislative Budget Office have worked with executive budget officers, agencies, and fiscal analysts to understand whether or not the notes were still needed. And as a result, on the slide I have displayed here, it indicates one, but late last week we had three others that were inactivated. So the requester indicated that they were no longer needed. We've received two new fiscal note requests and have completed and published one of the one fiscal note request. This doesn't include any data or statistics related to classified notes because that's not public information. We also have been able to have the staff of the office be located together on a temporary basement in the on a temporary basis in the basement of the state office building. So we will be leveraging and utilizing that space until space opens up at the 525 Park building across the street from here when the revisor's office staff move from that location back into the state office building. For the fiscal note tracking system, we did, as I mentioned, we had done a release on September 3rd in cooperation with MMB to make sure that the system was prepared for the transition to the Legislative Budget Office. We have a second phase that is of changes to the system that are planned to be included, and those are planned to be released on November 22nd of this year. This will include additional, there's three reports that have been designed for the Legislative Budget Office for us to be able to better track fiscal note requests. And then also we are reinstating a functionality that used to exist prior to 2015 where on the revisor's site when someone goes to check on the status of a bill, they can also link directly from that site if there's been a fiscal note that was completed on the bill. And then the final modification that's being made to the system is a role is being designed for executive budget officers. One of the first things that as an oversight commission and that I did as a director was entered into the agreement with MMB for the fiscal note tracking system for the LBO to have operational control. And a new role is necessary for executive budget officers so that they can view information at the same time fiscal analysts and the LBO can view information on any request that is not a classified request. So the changes in the system to make sure that they're no longer in their executive budget officer role of reviewing, approving, and assigning fiscal notes, those changes will be made to the system. The total budget for the fiscal note tracking system is $69,000. That's how much we had budgeted within the Legislative Budget Office. The phase one changes were $11,688. Our maintenance and operations costs was prorated because we took over operational control on September 1st. So this number here represents a prorated based on the Legislative Budget Office having the system through from September 1st through June 30th of $35,503. So then the remaining balance for the phase two changes was $21,809. Of that, the phase two changes are estimated to cost about $19,900. So there's a little bit of remaining balance from what was originally budgeted for the system changes. From the staffing perspective, at the conclusion of the 2019 session, there were additional resources provided to add additional staff to the Legislative Budget Office. The four analysts that you met earlier in the meeting were a result of postings that were done over the summer to recruit individuals. We received 137 applications from 16 different states and one U.S. territory. So we had really a significant interest in the positions that were made available. We conducted 32 phone interviews, and then we also had 16 in-person interviews that took place. The interview panels that I've been utilizing for the analysts include myself from the Legislative Budget Office, a fiscal analyst from the House, a fiscal analyst from the Senate, and then an executive budget officer from Minnesota Management and Budget. So the in-person interviews were conducted by that panel, which resulted in the four individuals that you met earlier in the meeting being hired and joining the Legislative Budget Office. This slide provides you a list of the different staff in the office as well as their assignment areas. Those with noted with an asterisk represent the members, the individuals who joined the office most recently. We have been conducting a series of introductory meetings with agencies. In addition to the development of our uniform standards and procedures, we're now working on the development of a user guide, which will provide more examples, as well as provide information on how to use the fiscal note tracking system. We'll be developing training that we're planning to offer later this year and early next year on both the uniform standards and procedures, as well as the fiscal note tracking system. And in addition to that user guide, we're developing our internal operations manual to give us guidance and consistency about how we assign fiscal notes, how we review fiscal notes, and things of that nature. In addition to the limited number of fiscal notes that have come our way since the transition, we've been continuing to conduct case studies on fiscal notes from the 2019 legislative session, really working with agencies, executive budget officers, and fiscal analysts to understand the dynamics of the more complicated fiscal notes in an effort to prepare ourselves for the responsibilities we'll be taking on as we move into the 2020 session. We also started a series of what we're calling knowledge building sessions, where we invite in guest speakers to talk with us on specific topics. One of our first sessions was focused on how to create and maintain a nonpartisan office and independence. We've also had a session on the biennial budget process as well as the legislative budget process in the Senate and the House, and we'll be starting again tomorrow with a series of sessions that will go into December. Mm-hmm. And with that concludes my update. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Any questions, Representative Carlson?
Yeah, I'm looking at the assignments.
I'm looking at the assignments, and how did you determine workload? In the House, basically all fiscal bills end up in the Ways and Means Committee, and one of my current responsibilities is to assign those to divisions, and the workload of the divisions varies greatly in terms of the legislation they get. So what kind of attention did you pay to what the workload would be with each of these assignments?
Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and Vice Chair Carlson, we took into account the committee structure in the House, the committee structure in the Senate, the MMB previous executive budget officer assignment, and then we took a look at some historical trends in terms of the number of fiscal notes. One of the cautions we employed in terms of looking at the number of fiscal notes is that not every fiscal note is equal with respect to the amount of work or analysis that might be required. So we took all of those things into consideration in assigning the fiscal notes in this manner to try and have a somewhat of an equitable distribution of workload across the analysts in the office. We are committed to adjusting during the session if we see that this is not working. And we're working on intentionally identifying backups for each of the analysts so that if one analyst is receiving a high volume of fiscal notes, someone else can step in and assist them. And we may next summer also take a look at this and make some adjustments based on what we learn after a year of experience.
Okay, that answers the question because I know workload can vary, so thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Carlson and Ms. Weber. I would say also that there was quite a bit of a discussion whether to do this or have everybody be a generalist. Mm-hmm. And this was to enable them to focus and become more of an expert in a particular area. But it is your understanding, though, that everybody would be trained in such a way that they can help out in any area. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Yes, Representative Vogel.
Thank you. And first, thank you, Ms. Weber, for the fine job that you've done and in a short amount of time that you've had to do it. I am curious, you touched on reviewing fiscal notes that have been already done for legislation that's already passed. And I know one of the things we had discussed at one time in the past was looking at them to see how they actually came out relative to what actually happened, because we know their projections. Curious, I know that you're going to spend a lot of time on training and you've got a lot of getting just up to date on everything else you have to do, but are you also planning on taking a look at some of those fiscal notes from either this past session or the session before, and now that there's information with the actual cost relative to the projected cost, to look at doing an analysis on that? And if so, would that be something that you would be sharing or looking at more from just a training standpoint?
Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and Representative Vogel, that is one of the activities that we're anticipating being engaged in at some point in the future during the interim, during these first several months of the development and creation of the Legislative Budget Office. We're focusing more on ensuring the analysts have enough expertise and knowledge to be able to analyze fiscal notes that they will see during this upcoming session. So I wanted to intentionally make sure that we were focused on that core function of analyzing the fiscal notes and gaining that knowledge. But in the future, in the interim, that's our plan for an activity that we will engage in, is to look at previous legislation and see if an analysis can be done on the cost after implementation.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Representative Vogel. Okay. Anybody else? All right. Our next agenda item is the prioritization criteria for revenue estimates. So revenue would come on up. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Willett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Eric Willett. I'm the Director of Tax Research at the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and with me are the two tax fiscal analysts.
Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal.
Jay Wilms, Senate Fiscal.
Good to have you here. Appreciate it very, very much. Looking forward to this presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You should have a two-page handout, which I will refer to in a little bit. By way of introduction, we were asked to come and talk with you a little bit about how the process works for the creation of revenue estimates, which are similar to fiscal notes, but are done separately. Revenue estimates are prepared by the Department of Revenue for bills that change tax laws, and therefore the Tax Committee is our primary audience. So we, in the revenue estimates, estimate the change in tax revenues or state aids to local governments in the property tax area that are considered tax-related aids and credits. While fiscal notes in the Department of Revenue focus on the administrative costs to the department, the revenue estimates focus on the change in the actual revenues that are brought into the state's general fund and other funds from taxes. Revenue estimates are something that we have staff who, like your new staff, specialize in various taxes so that they can understand the bills that are presented. The Tax Research Division and the Property Tax Research Unit prepare between 400 and 600 revenue estimates over the course of a session, and there's a table in your handout that shows that distribution. And what we'd like to do today is talk a little bit about how those requests get, estimates get requested, and then how we prioritize our work during session. By way of context, though, I'd like to talk a little bit about the tax research units because we do revenue estimates as our primary activity during the legislative session, but we also provide a lot of other reports and data and respond to requests from the media and other agencies and the legislature. So we are sort of a resource for understanding taxes for the policy development process. With that, I'll turn it over to my colleagues to talk a little bit about how the request process works.
Ms. Templin?
Madam Chair and members, the request process in the House is a process of communication. Fiscal staff and House research staff often meet with the tax chair and the committee administrators on a weekly basis. And during these staff meetings, there's communication about the upcoming agendas for the week ahead or maybe a couple of weeks ahead looking out into the schedule. As a fiscal analyst, we take that information about possible bills that will be heard during committee, and we take that information back, and with the information that we can share, we communicate it to tax research, the Tax Research Division within the Department of Revenue, to convey that we will need estimates for bills in the future, and we give them a list to the extent that the tax chair and the committee administrator allow that information to be shared. When we do communicate this information, we pay particular attention to bills that require data, require new data that the committee hasn't seen before and that may take the Department of Revenue time to research and dig up. So that is just a quick overview of kind of the steps we take when we have information about the agenda in terms of communicating it to the department. Along with that, there are bills that are heard where there are contacts there. For example, if there's a sales tax exemption and for a community, there's a contact within that community that will have fiscal information that we then pass along to the department to help them with the revenue estimate. So there's a good exchange between the committee and the Tax Research Division to help them with their analyses.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Mr. Wilms.
Madam Chair and committee members, I think as my...
Folks, when you're testifying, I remind you to just really lean into the microphone.
Sure.
It really makes the difference.
Okay. Madam Chair and committee members, as my colleague, Ms. Templin, mentioned, we really serve as an informational liaison between members, for me in the Senate, specifically the committee chair and the committee administrator who I work most closely with. Providing a heads up to the Department of Revenue as far as what's going to be coming through the pipeline, specific days on the schedule that might be in the future. For instance, the committee tends to you know, group proposals in a certain fashion to make it easier for the committee members to dig in on that particular issue. So, for instance, we'll have a day devoted to certain income tax expenditures, or we'll have a day devoted to tax increment financing. So in cases like those, we need to provide as much heads up as possible that it could be on the schedule coming up, because it creates a certain bottleneck in terms of proposals that all deal with a certain thing. So basically, we kind of are working on both sort of roles, providing information from DOR back to the committee and the chair and committee administrators, and then to DOR about, you know, what's a priority to the extent that we can share that information.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wilms. Mr. Ouellette, do you have some other comments as
yes,
well?
Yes, Madam Chair, just to follow up, communication between the fiscal staff and us is critical for us to be able to manage our workload, and in as much as they're able to give us a heads up, because our staff are specialized, if there is a income tax credit day that has a lot of bills that are on the same subject, we may only have a couple of staff who are able to prepare those revenue estimates. So the more heads up we get, the more we can work ahead. And it is obviously often the case that agendas will change, but even that early heads up, even if some of the bills that we prepare ultimately aren't heard, it still saves us a lot of time and helps us to manage our workload more effectively. I should also mention that we also receive confidential requests, some through the fiscal staff and some for the administration or other requesters, and I'll get to the prioritization list in a minute. But those confidential requests, we also have to weave into our workload. And oftentimes, some of the most complicated and new and difficult revenue estimates start out as confidential requests and then may become an introduced bill. So then it becomes part of the public revenue estimate process. And that can be helpful because it gives us time to talk with the author or through the fiscal staff, understand the intent, make sure that the language that we're provided actually is doing what the author intends it to do, and we can help them get a proposal into shape prior to introduction. And in those cases, then the revenue estimate is nearly ready to go at the time of introduction, and that can also make for a smoother process. If there aren't any questions at this point, I'd like to talk about the prioritization list and how we prioritize our work.
You can go ahead. Do you have a question? Yes.
Well, I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time, but I did have a question of either you or Ms. Templin. I'm on the House side and serve in the Tax Committee, so I'm somewhat familiar with the process. First time I was on the Tax Committee was in 1973. But I did take a leave of absence for a few years and then went back on. But at any rate, I do know that sometimes negotiations, especially when you're putting the omnibus bill together, and I'm talking about negotiations among tax committee members before the bill would be referred to Ways and Means or when the bill is being put together. So how do you handle amendments? Because some of those can be very significant and they can come in very late in the process as the negotiations take place. And maybe that's a question more for Ms. Templin, but sometimes those negotiations are confidential. You touched on that as well. But sometimes they're very last minute as we try to put together, and either caucus would have to deal with this, a bill that will pass muster with the majority of the committee members. Mm-hmm.
Ms. Templin.
Yes. Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, amendments, we treat them like bills that are being introduced at the last minute. Basically, if there's language, we will try to ballpark an estimate to go with the language. So you have an estimate, and if we can't do it, then we go to the Department of Revenue. If the author of the amendment is okay with that, we share the language of the department, and we try to, again, get an estimate for the language that can be used for consideration into an omnibus bill.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Representative Carlson?
I was going to hear from the department on that, okay, as well, being that they might
yep.
possibly be part of the process. And I'm talking really about kind of those last minute agreements that are reached, and we all know sometimes a major amendment, not that the issues haven't been heard, and maybe that plays into this revenue note process as well, where you're simply massaging, but sometimes there will be new additions or major adjustments.
Mr. Willett.
Yeah. Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, the markup process is among the most challenging because of the volume of requests to get and the time sensitivity. I would reiterate, you had mentioned the confidentiality, and that can be really helpful if, you know, one side has a proposal that they want to get an estimate on before they decide whether they're even going to present it in negotiations. And we have a longstanding practice in the tax committee where both the heads up we get on the hearing schedules and the amendments in these circumstances can be confidential. And what that means in this context is only the tax research staff is aware of the information. Sometimes we need to talk to one of our attorneys to make sure we understand it, but we always ask permission to make sure that that's acceptable. So we are able to sort of keep that within the research staff. So when negotiations are sensitive, you can trust that you can get information from us without having that information shared with the rest of the department. But balancing the workload is a challenge, and maybe this would be a good time to talk about the prioritization, because I think that plays into how we handle these circumstances of the markup and the conference committee. So on your handout is, at the bottom of the first page, is a list of that we share with staff, House and Senate staff, each year. So prior to session, we have meetings with both House and Senate staff, and we include both partisan and nonpartisan tax staff in these meetings, where we talk about how we prioritize work and how, and then on the back is another page that we share with them, which is sort of tips on how to make things work as smoothly as possible. And it's really about how to maintain good communication and ensure that we can be as efficient as possible in preparing revenue estimates. But the prioritization list, which has remained basically unchanged for my whole time in this process, which is 12 years or so, and I think it's been longstanding since long before that. Our number one priority is bills scheduled for hearing, and that is different than the traditional fiscal note process. What triggers our work is a sign from one of the tax committees that they are serious enough about a proposal that they're going to hold a hearing on it. And that's the number one way that we prioritize our workload, is to say, well, if it's got a hearing scheduled, or the chair's staff tells us that it's going to be scheduled, then that elevates it to be the most pressing thing for us to work on at the time.
Mr. Willett, I just have a question on that regard via a previous response. So amendments that go along with a bill that is scheduled for hearing would also be given that number one priority as directed by committee staff? In other words, they're anticipating an amendment?
Mr. Willett? Madam Chair and members, yes, especially if it is an author's amendment that the author is planning to amend first thing in the hearing, then we treat that as just getting the bill in the shape that it's going to be presented. So that becomes the bill that we're analyzing then. And we will prepare a revenue estimate with a note on it that says, as proposed to be amended, because the amendment isn't adopted yet. And we'll use the amendment number that we're given when the language of the amendment is sent over. Sometimes the amendment isn't written, it's going to be oral, so then we just leave it as proposed to be amended without an amendment number. Okay. So there's a little bit of trust involved there that it's going to happen the way they intend it to happen, but that has worked very well for us. Amendments that are being prepared by others to amend into the bill, if we have time, we can prepare those for a hearing, but that wouldn't be that would be of secondary priority than getting the bill estimated as the author is intending to present it.
Thank you, Mr. Willett.
So the second in our priority list is the governor's office, the commissioner and assistant commissioner of the Department of Revenue. One of the things that works well for us is that the governor's budget is put together earlier than the tax omnibus bills, so we're not trying to juggle all of them at the same time, although there can be overlap with tax committee hearings and work for the governor's office. But if there are bills scheduled for hearing, we do prioritize those first, and then second would be work for the commissioner's office and the governor's office. Then next in line would be other requests from the committee, the tax committees, that maybe a bill isn't scheduled for hearing yet, but they want it to decide whether they want to give it a hearing or something. That would be the third in the priority list. If the staff have requests of us, either data or language they're working on, generally it's for a member, but they would be next in the list. That would be the nonpartisan staff, and then the partisan staff request would come after that. Individual legislators who have a bill but they haven't gotten it scheduled for a hearing would come next. Fiscal notes come after that. So traditionally, there has been a space in fiscal notes for tax bills that includes a box for the numbers that go into a revenue estimate. But the deadline for fiscal notes is often different than the deadline for revenue estimates. A fiscal note maybe have a deadline that's earlier than a bill is scheduled for hearing. So they'd like to have the revenue estimate numbers included in the fiscal note when they're completing the fiscal note. So we try to accommodate that as much as possible. But that is secondary to our priority of serving the tax committee. So we fill in those blanks for the fiscal note when possible. And I think we would do pretty well with that. But as you can see, it's pretty far down on the priority list. And I should say that about a very high percentage of our work, I couldn't put a number to it, but most of our work is in the first three of the priority list. That's where, and then the fiscal notes. Then once we get through all the sort of official channels of legislation, then we get to others who may be involved in the policy process but aren't of the legislature or the administration. When they give us requests, we'll work on those as we're able, but they are lower priority. So if a business association or a local government association has something they're working on and they want information from us, we will accommodate that when we can get to that.
Thank you, Mr. Willett. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, I'll follow up on those last two. Now, you mentioned mm-hmm. key organizations, and then you mentioned the couple of groups that frequently interact with the legislature. Could you give us the support system from the House perspective? we don't have to flip switches on and off in the same way. Although we do switch them.
Well, Representative Carlson, we're just not always talking. I think that's
right. Yeah. But I'm interested in, it's kind of clear to me at least what some of the key outside organizations would be. And then you have other outside organizations. And I'm kind of interested in a sample or two of what those might be. And then my fundamental question is, do they pay a fee? Because there's some cost to putting together a revenue note, or as this group here works with fiscal notes. So if you could comment on both those points.
Sure. Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, so those number 8 and 9 have basically been written that way for at least 12 years. There really isn't a distinction, a meaningful distinction between these key organizations and other organizations anymore, but I just wanted to present to you the language as we share it with legislative staff, but those could, for all intents and purposes, be one. We don't charge for revenue, for helping prepare revenue estimates for other organizations. If there are, we feel like if they're involved in the policy process and engaging the legislature, and we are meeting our higher priority obligations, we're helping the policy process by assisting these organizations in getting their proposals in shape. The groups that we probably most often communicate with are the Center for Fiscal Excellence, the Chamber and the Business Partnership, the Council of Nonprofits, the Budget Project. Those are probably the ones that are the most frequent contacts, but I'd have to kind of look through our old logs to see who else we work with. The local government associations on the property tax side, the League of Cities and the Association of Counties and those sorts of organizations.
Thank you, Mr. Willett. Representative
Chair,
Carlson?
That. I was just kind of curious, being that they were split out there. I wasn't sure exactly what that meant. Like I mentioned,
yep.
It would be fairly clear with what you just said who some mm-hmm. of those groups would be that frequently interact, and the curve that you threw me was when I looked at other outside organizations and mm-hmm. what that might mean. Thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, I should also add that, you know, we get data requests that aren't, and information requests that aren't directly related to the legislative process. And those are year-round, sometimes from the media, sometimes from academia, sometimes from other states. And we prioritize those. We do a lot of that, but we prioritize those a lot lower during session, and especially if they're not time-sensitive, we'll often tell requesters, you know, this is a great question for June, not a question for March. So we can manage our workload to some degree in that way.
Thank you, Mr. Willett. Mr. Marks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Willett, I assume that this prioritization is really by tax topic area or whatever the appropriate term would be, that you might be working on bills scheduled for the committee on income taxes, but you might be down somewhere else in the priority list on property taxes or mineral taxes or something, depending on who's working on it. So it's not that every bill you're working on is going to be in one of these items.
Mr. Willett.
Madam Chair and Mr. Marks, that's correct. We have staff who specialize, and they've all kind of got their own prioritization list, and if they don't have any bills for hearing, they're going to be working on other things. Ms. Weber said about her staff, we also do try to cross-train where possible to give ourselves flexibility when there is an overload in one area. On the rare occasion, both the House and Senate tax bills, the committees decide they're going to have a hearing on the same tax type on the same day. And in those instances, you know, then it's all hands on deck as much as we can. But many of these taxes are very complicated, so complete cross-training is really not plausible. So part of the feedback loop that helps us do our work is a little bit of expectation management, and the fiscal staff are critical for that. There are times when we're frank with the fiscal staff that, you know, we don't think we can get all of these bills done in time, and sometimes agendas are changed to accommodate when, especially if there's a really big new proposal that something we've never seen before that requires a lot of work, then we have informal conversations, hopefully before the bill has been initially scheduled, to say that, you know, we're going to need a few weeks on this one or something, and that works well early in session. Obviously, when we get to the markup of the omnibus bills, then we don't have that luxury, and we have to do the best we can with the hours that we have to work with.
Thank you, Mr. Willett. Mr. Marks, you good? Or do you have something to follow?
Madam Chair, I have another question, but it's on the chart in the middle of the page, so if somebody else has questions on priorities,
okay,
you should
Representative
probably take
Neuer, you want to go ahead, and then we'll go to Mr. Marks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is in regards to fees rather than just taxes. If there's a fee that is also related to taxes, who handles that?
Mr. Willett.
Madam Chair and Representative Noor, fees are done through the fiscal note process rather than the revenue estimate process. So we do we estimate revenue changes for changes in tax law. There is some gray area between what is a fee and what is a tax, but over the many years working with MMB, EBOs, and now with the new Legislative Budget Office, if there are new things that come up where it's a little bit hard to tell whether it's a fee or a tax, we'll have a conversation with Ms. Weber and her staff and figure out where, based on precedents and similarity to other things, is it more appropriate to handle it as a tax or as a fee?
But Thank you, Mr. Willett. Representative Neuer, Mr. Marks, or?
Could I do a follow-up?
Follow-up, sure. Representative Carlson.
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty basic one, but when you talk about tax and fees, I had a big debate with the Carlson administration years ago on what a tax and a fee were. How do you define a tax?
Mr. Willett.
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, We generally do it based on what chapter of statute they're in, chapters 270 through 278, I think. Our 298 are the tax statutes, and then there's the local government aids, which are mostly in 477A, but there's a few in other chapters. I'm not sure how formally that's been defined, but that fits the profile of how we've done it, at least for the last 15 years. And I think it's been pretty consistent much longer back for that. But if something is called a tax and looks like a tax and the initial draft puts it in another chapter, we'll still probably look at it like it's a tax and then touch base and have a conversation to make sure we're in agreement.
And Madam Representative Chair, that's Carlson. Not too different than the way we look at it within Ways and Means with legislation that comes in as to which division it would be referred to, and I'm sure the Tax Committee operates the same way, although they have fewer divisions to deal with. But at any rate, I won't revisit my debate with the Carlson administration, but it went on for several hearings. But thank you.
Thank you very much. Absolutely, a long debate, many, many sessions also, kind of a debate on taxes and fees and where it comes from. Mr. Marks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Willett, were you going to comment on the chart in the middle of the page? Or if the point I was going to make on here is I wasn't aware of how many confidential requests there are, especially compared to fiscal notes, and I think that's interesting and perhaps instructive for the fiscal note process in the future, but I think I don't know the number of confidential fiscal notes in the last year or two, but I suspect it's 20 or under, mm-hmm. and that's greatly different than the number for the revenue estimates, and especially if you look at the ratio of confidential ones to public ones. In some years, there are more confidential ones than there are public ones. So.
Thank you, Mr. Marks, for pointing that out. Did notice that as well. I think sometimes, for the most part, I think especially with the Legislative Budget Office, the awareness of the fact that you can have a confidential fiscal note. So maybe once they know more that it is actually an option to use, we might find that happening a little bit more. I would say the question I have for you is, how do you handle confidential revenue estimates? What is kind of the process? I would expect that the request comes through the same channel as any other request, except with it would come the fact that it would be a confidential request. So what happens after that? Ms. Templin, are you going to?
Yeah, Madam Chair and members, when we receive a confidential request, we ask the member if we can't ballpark the estimate with an we ask the member if we can provide the language or draft bill language to the Department of Revenue to help us with this estimate. And if the member agrees, then we do flag the estimate as confidential to the Department of Revenue. And our understanding with the Department of Revenue when we submit this confidential request is that their analyses of that estimate will stay within the Tax Research Division, which means that they won't go talk to the commissioner's office about this proposal, or they won't go talk to the auditing division, that their analyses will stay within the confines of that division. And then eventually we do obtain a revenue estimate. And when we get that revenue estimate, it is just sent to the analyst, and then like myself, and then I do send the estimate to the requested, the member that is requesting the analysis directly. It's not posted on the website, and the member doesn't get it directly from the Department of Revenue.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Mr. Willett?
Madam Chair, I would add that it's important when a request is confidential, there are times when we have to give caveats in the revenue estimate that the numbers could change when we are able to talk to the taxing division or the lawyers or whatever to make sure that we're fully understanding the impact of the proposal. So there's a downside to having it completely confidential. And sometimes we will ask or we'll tell the fiscal staff, if we're allowed to share it with staff, not the commissioner's office, then we'll be able to give you a number that's going to be closer to what you'll see if you introduce the bill and get a formal hearing. Because we know a lot in tax research, but we don't know everything, and there's a lot of knowledge in the other parts of the department that are really critical to completing an estimate as accurately as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Willett. Mr. Wilms, did you?
I think that actually summarizes it real well. There's been several occasions where, you know, I've been given the choice, to ask the author or, you know, the person requesting it, you know, it could be preliminary or, you know, we could go to another part outside of research for more information, and then usually it's up to the author to decide. You know, I'd actually just like to keep this, you know, within the research agency and then get a preliminary number, or, you know, we want the best number possible, and then they'll go down that path. So frequently I've seen that occur.
Thank you, Mr. Wilms.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair, Mr. Willett, just I want to press this point just a little bit. If you receive instruction from the House and Senate fiscal staff that they wish to have, that the author wishes to have the language maintained on a confidential basis, you assiduously hold to that restriction. Is that a fair assumption?
Mr. Willett?
Madam Chair, Mr. Nauman, yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Would you restate that, Mr. Willett?
Madam Chair, if we receive a revenue estimate request from legislative staff that is marked as confidential, then the information about that proposal stays within the tax research or the property tax research unit in the Department of Revenue. And we have a separate tracking system for confidential requests so that we can maintain them that way.
Thank you, Mr. Willett. When you mentioned tracking system, does that mean you have a department, like we have the fiscal note software tracking system? Do you also have that then for revenue estimates as well?
Madam Chair, we do, but it's a lot less sophisticated because it doesn't involve multiple agencies. It's more of a working to-do list that there's two of them, one in the property tax research division and one in the tax research division that we maintain. It's more of just a workload management list than a sophisticated system.
Thank you, Mr. Willett. Mr. Wilms.
Madam Chair and committee members, I think Cynthia and I both are aware of our processes, and we each, instead of tracking the requests that we have, because we have various requests into the Department of Revenue, both through property taxes and the research division, I'll keep all of my requests in a spreadsheet when I made the request, you know, information about the request. So I track it that way, just personally, as opposed to using the legislative budget office or MMB's fiscal note tracking system. I'll use a separate system. And then to submit the request, we actually use a digital portal through SharePoint to submit it.
Thank you, Mr. Wilms. All right, anybody else? Mr. Vogel, Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As long as we're on kind of tactical stuff here, on the other side, on number 13, it says revenue estimates made prior to the February forecast may need to be updated. The question is, are the revenue forecasts subject to the forecast, or are you doing them somewhat independent, looking at all of the facts? And the reason I say that, of course, is because occasionally we've had, in fact, this session where we had the forecast came out and all of a sudden the revenue is surpassing basically every month. And therefore, we get toward the end of session. Are you using that revenue forecast as your baseline, or are you actually reacting to what's actually going on in the market with tax receipts?
Mr. Willett.
Madam Chair and Representative Vogel, we do use the most recent forecast as the baseline for our revenue estimates. So if we do, we have models for the different tax types that are different types of models for different taxes, but in the case of income taxes, we have a micro simulation model with a sample of 40,000 tax returns in it that are from a couple years previous because we need to clean the data and get it all ready to go. But then we use the forecast for growing that model into the forecast window. So if we're using 2016 income tax returns during a session, then we will use the most recent forecast to grow income and other parts of the model out through the forecast window. And when we switch from the November forecast to the February forecast, we have to update the model, which, so for example, if we have an income tax cut that we estimate in January, then the February forecast comes out and income growth is significantly higher in the February forecast than that income tax. Then income taxes are expected to be higher in that forecast. Therefore, the cost of that income tax cut will be more expensive now because we'll update it for that extra growth that was in the February forecast. Does that
Thank you, Mr. Willett. Representative Vogel, did you want to follow up on that?
No, I guess the question was, too, is mm-hmm. when we got into April and May this year, we could see that the forecast revenue was actually significantly different than what was actually coming in. So the question was, is there any time that you would adjust your expectations relative to what's actually happening rather than just relying on that forecast as mm-hmm. the baseline?
Yes, Representative Vogel, I agreed with that. I think that was the question I had was, part of that, are you independent of the February forecast, or does the February forecast dictate parameters that you have to stay within?
Madam Chair and Representative Vogel, thank you for that follow-up. We do maintain connection to the most recent forecast. So if there is a significant change post-forecast, that would get picked up as a forecast adjustment in the following November. It wouldn't change our revenue estimates. A couple things I would say about that. That's a longstanding practice of having the most recent forecast be the environment in which we're operating under. But there's a practical point of, you know, we have this priority list that it's all we can do to keep up with it. If we also had to think about, do we need to update our baseline on an ongoing basis through session, I'm not sure we'd have the capacity to do that in a effective way. I know that in the past there have been times when there's been at least consideration of an additional official forecast when there's been some radical change. If we ever got into a significant enough change in what's going on in the economic environment that was contemplated, then we would follow suit with that updating for that new forecast. But I think short of that, we would say it'll roll over to the next forecast.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Willett. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I think perhaps you just answered it, but just this summer we had, you know, with the budget, three major accounts, significant amount of money that was contingent upon the monthly revenue reports, and they have been now funded because revenue ran ahead. So just so I'm clear, you don't do a look back. You look forward to the November forecast to make those adjustments. Or if we had increases in enrollment in some of our human service programs or something, that would be adjusted in the November forecast then. Is that correct?
Mr. Willett?
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, with regards to the human services spending, that's not in my bailiwick, but my understanding is that, yeah, that sort of stuff gets adjusted in the forecast, not on an ongoing basis.
But in terms of the tax side, those three programs then that I referenced earlier, that would be the November forecast, so that would be included.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, that's correct. Anything that's an indirect effect on tax revenues, not a change in tax law, but a change in the underlying economy, is a forecast issue, not a revenue estimate issue.
Thank you, Mr. Willett. Okay, Ms. Rattan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to clarify that those three items that were being funded out of any balance over and above what was projected at end of session, those appropriations have been set up in the system so that they're available, or they will be available in some cases by October 15th. And those that spending will get reflected in the November forecast, as well as the revenue that has been collected over and above the February forecast estimates. So we will have a close amount for the last fiscal year that's over and above what we were previously projecting, and that will be reflected in the November forecast.
Thank you, Ms. Rattan. All right, members, I thought it was interesting for me that I always... Pardon? Mr. Marks?
Madam Chair, I could have waited on that one, but just a quick question kind of related to the revenue estimate. When you have a revenue estimate and there's going to be an administrative cost, when revenue is going to need to modify a system or set up something different to make it work, how do you indicate that in addition to the revenue change, that the revenue estimate would show revenue is going to need $50,000 to modify this system or something like that? How would you put that in the revenue estimate, or how do you handle that?
Madam Chair and Mr. Marks, thank you for that question. The numbers themselves would be identified through the fiscal note process, but on the revenue estimate, we do have a box that says, are there administrative costs, yes or no? So unless it's a confidential request and we can't talk to the taxing divisions, we'll check the box to indicate that you should request a fiscal note because there's more than just the revenue impact with the legislation.
On the governor's bill, you include the operational cost on that estimate.
No, they're not. Thank you, Mr. Willett. Okay. Did you have another comment, Mr. Willett?
Madam Chair, if I could, I would like to circle back to Mr. Marks' observation about the table real quickly and the mm-hmm. confidential estimates. Mm-hmm. Just to be fully transparent about this, many of the confidential requests become introduced bills and then show up again in the public requests. So it wouldn't be fair to say that there's that many, again, completely unique requests. A lot of these are closely related. We're helping a member refine a proposal through some confidential exchange, and then they introduce it and maybe scheduled for a hearing. So I wouldn't put too much meaning in the ratio between the confidential and the public request.
Thank you, Mr. Willett. I appreciate that clarification on those numbers. That's very important. Okay. Anybody else at this point? I was just going to mention that So in general, the tax revenue or effects as such is a year-round activity for you. I think most folks think of it as only during session. But as we heard from Ms. Weber, there's been some fiscal note activity already in the Legislative Budget Office, so things go on. Can you give me a sense of how much work goes on between sessions versus during?
Madam Chair and members, requests for revenue estimates do die down during the summertime. We get a handful here and there because people have ideas year-round. But there are other things that are necessary for our session work that we have to do during the summer and fall. We have to update all of our models, do a lot of data cleaning, and that sort of thing. We also have statutory requirements of some major reports that we produce. Our tax expenditure budget and our tax incidence study. We do a handbook for legislators and others about the tax system. We're sometimes given a unique one-time report to do by the legislature. So that work is also work we do during the interim. But the revenue requests kind of start up again in the late summer with the department starting to put its own policy and technical bills together, and then the governor's budget and the legislative requests really pick up generally after the November forecast, although there are some prior. Does that seem right?
Thank you, Mr. Willett. I appreciate that additional information. Members, any other questions at all? Okay. Thank you very much, all three of you, Mr. Wilms, Ms. Templin, and Mr. Willett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, members, the next item on the agenda is future meeting topics. I worked with Ms. Weber over the last weeks in regards to previous meetings where things would come up, but our agenda was full that day, and we said, well, we'll park those as a future topic for discussion. So the draft list of what we have, and I want to make sure that each one of you, you may have at some point thought you put something on a topic list we didn't quite capture it, I'm not sure, or you may have something in addition to what we have here in front of us today. So it's open for discussion. First of all, do we have a complete list right now of topics? Are there additional ones that we would like to have covered? Representative Carlson, does that seem to, does this list seem to be what you thought would be on
that's,
future topic?
That's, Madam Chair, my best recollection, and in fact, mm-hmm. the topic we just completed was the one that I had mm-hmm. recommended. So part of my agenda was complete, but I'm interested in what's on the list, but I don't think I have anything to add at this point.
Okay. All right, so then, members, what we'll do is I'll work with Ms. Weber, and for future meetings of the LBO, we will give consideration to these. I know there's the costs associated with FTEs, item E, and absorbed costs, F, and D, actually D, E, F. But I think for the most part, what we want to do, session starts February 11th, and prior to that, and then the fiscal notes come up, I think there are some needs to talk about those three items in particular. I think would be very helpful to the Legislative Budget Office to have that. And then, Ms. Weber, you're also coming out with a, is it a booklet or some additional process information?
Madam Chair, we're developing what's called a user guide, which will include some additional examples on how to complete fiscal notes, how to address things that might not be standard or might be a little bit more complicated, and our hope is to have that available late November.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. And I would say, and Mr. Heller, if you want to come on up, we'll get to you here shortly. He's there. We won't have him come to the table just yet, Mr. Heller. Just noticed you weren't in the room. Not yet at the table, Mr. Heller. We'll just have you in the room. So when it's time, I'll call you up. So members, future meeting dates, I'd like to have one again here November, however it works on our schedule, so that we can have a conversation about some of those issues. The other thing is that Minnesota Management and Budget has sent over a letter to us, the MMB role in fiscal note review. Our staff is reviewing that, and we just want to let MMB know that we have received it. We do not, at this time, have enough information to say, but we're not saying we're accepting or agreeing to this at all. We're just acknowledging receipt of it, and members, if you would read that, and our staff are working together in the House and the Senate to review this, to review statutes, and so one of the things we would need to put on that next meeting would be to have a bigger discussion about this area. Ms. Rattan.
Madam Chair, if I may clarify, because I was talking with some staff earlier that made me feel like maybe there was some misunderstanding of what we're saying in this request, and this request is intended for executive branch entities. We are not asking agencies to send us completed fiscal notes in advance of going to the LBO. What this note is, or this memo is asking agencies to do, is if they see a fiscal note on a bill that has some of these issues that we continually flag as places where we need to dialogue about assumptions and what the estimates are going to be, we're asking them to reach out to their EBO as they're putting together the fiscal note. So we're not asking for a secondary review process. We're asking for a dialogue with their executive budget officer as they're compiling the note to make sure that MMB is not coming around on the back end and objecting. In talking with the LBO, there's a lot of concern that MMB may wait till the note is already signed off and then raise concerns. And so the idea here is we tried to identify We have a list of 10 places where we often need to work through assumptions with agencies. And so we're asking them to just have those conversations with their executive budget officer as they're putting the note together.
I appreciate, Ms. Rattan, that clarification. I think it was important for me that the rest of our Oversight Commission members are aware of that and that this will be an important discussion, but we weren't prepared. If you'll note, this was dated October 1st, so we just haven't had time to do the thorough work and to, I think Mr. Tan, that is a very important piece of that, to have clarification and that we can seek to do that. I think that'll be very important. I think one of the things I was thinking on the future meeting day topics might have to do with assumptions. I don't know if we've gone through that, Ms. Weber, but maybe just kind of add it tentatively and we'll flesh it out a little bit more. With that, members, is there anything else that you would like to bring to the attention of the commission at this time? If not, Mr. Heller, you have 2 minutes to, and remember, Mr. Heller, this is the Legislative Budget Office Oversight Commission, and any remarks today have to be pertinent to our agenda today. Mr. Heller.
Thank you, Chair Kiffmeyer and members of the Legislative Budget Oversight Commission. My name is Rick Heller. The record needs to reflect I unofficially represent the twice exceptional people with print disabilities. I provided a note, Mr. Carlson. Since you only have four people here, I'm assuming you're not going to be able to pass that draft that's online. However, your other ones that continue to say draft and have been approved, I suggest that the LCC correct that. Also put a watermark on your documents that are online that says a draft. That way people will know that you're still in the process of approving those minutes. My suggestions today is it about correcting the minutes. Mr. Carlson has an opportunity if he wants to do that at the next meeting. Another one is why not have a sign-in sheet for these meetings? How about creating some rules for your committee about accessibility, including third parties, how they provide that to this committee? I was stand to be corrected, everybody. Now they have captioning with streams on this, and frankly, why not say captioning including in your videos that's online? Why not put that as a live in the header below? It's a live presentation. The screens outside have that. That's where it was watching because I use captioning all the time to follow along. There's about a 6-second delay between the captioning and what's said. Why not have the captioning in here if the screen isn't being utilized? A suggestion, if it's the only thing going on during session, why not use another commission such as the Legacy? They only have recordings over there. Why not use these buildings? It might cost more money. That's a fiscal thing. It might relate with you. If Legacy only has audio streams and this is open, why not let these commissions come over here and utilize these resources? Another one is standalone captioning. I don't know if it's embedded or they can pull it apart again regarding a 6-second delay, but when you see someone's mouth moving and it's and the script below is the same, for people that read lips, it'd help also to confirm what they have. I did express at the last meeting that structured online language wasn't accessible, but for some reason it wasn't mentioned in there as well that that the document, the PDF documents won't read that structure in an online language. That's an accessibility thing. Once again, that's a Mr. Carlson decision on that. When you have third parties do presentations, like for instance, you had your director when the four people came up, the new with the pound or the semicolon or the star, whatever that's called. She didn't pull up the PowerPoint to show who those people were by association. That would be something. When you had Department of Revenue here, they didn't pull up what they were talking about. Mr. Vogel himself specifically said one of the items out loud, but it wasn't on the overhead. So those are just some suggestions for an observation for civic engagement feedback. I appreciate your time. If you have any questions, welcome that as well. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. We have no questions, Mr. Heller. Thank you for being here. Members, with that, I believe our agenda being completed and our business being done for today, we are adjourned.